This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up just moments ago, the House voted to keep the doors of the federal government open for 2 weeks with a continuing resolution until December the 22nd. What then? Well, House Majority Whip Steve Scalise of Louisiana will be here with the latest on that. We'll also get his thoughts about President Trump recognizing Jerusalem as Israel's capital. He's still on the House floor, so we're hoping to get him in just a little bit. And here's a report of mice and men, researchers attempting to humanize mice. CNSNews.com editor-in-chief Terry Jeffrey will be here on that story. Also, fewer and fewer Americans remember that day of infamy from 76 years ago. Historian Bill Federer joins me with a look back at Pearl Harbor and its significance today. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. And by the way, I want to take just a moment to thank all of you who, in the last week or so that we have been, we've had this match from a generous donor. I want to thank all of you who have taken time to give us a call and shown your support by financially partnering with Washington Watch, the Family Research Council. As I've said before, this program comes to you strictly by the donations of folks like you all across the country. And so if you'd like to take advantage of that before the end of the year, everything you give will be matched. Maybe you could make a gift so big it couldn't be matched, but I'll find somebody. 866-FRC-RADIO, 866-FRC-RADIO. If you'd like to make that donation, we've got folks standing by. You can also do it at TonyPerkins.com. Okay, Steve Scalise was going to be joining us, but he's still on the House floor, so we're trying to ship things around here. This is, as I said before, this is always the challenge of doing live radio. They tell you never to do live radio with small children, animals, and politicians. We don't have any animals on the program, but we have everything else. Okay. We've switched it around. We've got Terry Jeffrey here coming on. There is a group of government researchers working for the National Institute of Health Laboratory in Montana made humanized mice by implanting the mice with tissues cut from human livers taken from babies at 17 to 22 weeks gestational age. Joining us now with this story, Terry Jeffrey, editor-in-chief of CNSNews.com. Terry, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Thanks for having me on. I'm not a child or a politician.
Well, that's why I have you on. And you're not an animal. You're not a mouse. So what is this? It sounds like the book title from Mice and Men. What's this all about?
You know, unfortunately, this is a long-running, very bizarre type of federally funded research that I think people need to know a lot more about, because it is the end destination of much of the fetal tissue that is harvested from late-term abortions that are done around this country. And this is funded by the federal government. For example, what happened in Montana is the NIH has its own laboratory up there, and people who were actually government employees were making what they called the acronym TKOBLT mice. Now, what does that stand for? It stands for triple knockout bone marrow, liver, thymus mouse. That bone marrow, liver, and thymus that they transplanted into this mice came from, as you said, babies that were aborted in the 17 to 22 weeks of gestation and pregnancy. These mice, Tony, were originally made because some scientists at Stanford, they're trying to find a what they call a small animal model that they could use for preclinical testing of AIDS drugs and therapies. And mice and rats cannot be infected with the human immunodeficiency virus that infects white blood cells in human beings. But they came up with the idea, if they had a mouse whose own immune system was suppressed, and they then had tissue from an unborn child whose immune system had not typed to his own body yet, they could transplant those tissues into the mouse and create a human immune system in the mouse. And that is, in fact, what they did. And using government money for about 30 years now, they've been developing this mouse, coming up with new versions of it, and doing research all over the country using tax dollars from the American people to do it.
Now, I understand that, Terry, you sent questions to the researchers about this. What did you hear back from them?
I did, and they didn't answer this story about the NIH lab in Montana. They didn't answer my question. And in the past, when I've reported on this years ago, I did get some answers. But this is something, Tony, I'm going to be continuing to report on this. There are institutions all over this country that are getting money from the National Institutes of Health to create these mice and do this research, which means the federal government, with tax dollars, is creating the demand for liver and thymus from late-term aborted babies. That's the bottom line here. And, you know, after the Center for Medical Progress did its videos at the right. abortion clinics where they showed the tissue was being harvested, Congress set up an investigative committee. And that investigative committee, they talked about these mice. They talked about the NIH funding this. But you know, they didn't grapple with it in as hardcore a way as I wish they had. However, the initial government omnibus appropriation bill that passed the U.S. House of Representatives in September included language that would forbid any tax dollars appropriated by that bill going to any research that uses tissue from induced abortions. We would end this type of research I'm talking about, creating these mice with these tissues taken from late-term aborted babies. And the CRs that they passed since then do not have the language. So the bottom line question right. Is the Republican Congress going to fund this research or not? They can stop it or they can fund it. That's the question.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon. Terry Jeffrey, editor-in-chief of CNSnews.com, my guest, talking about federal funding that is going to federal laboratories using the tissue from aborted babies. Now, this is the intersection of what we've talked about here for the last few years of, as he said, the Center for Medical Progress, the undercover videos that showed that Planned Parenthood was basically trafficking in baby body parts. So, Terry, what this says, and you just made this, I'm restating what you just said, essentially the government is creating the demand for this trafficking of baby body parts that Planned Parenthood was caught doing.
They are. And, in fact, according to the NIH's own reporting, which I cite in my column, in fiscal year 2017, they spent $107 million on human fetal tissue research, the NIH did, which was up from about $63 million back in 2012. So they're actually increasing the funding of this kind of research. The NIH basic funding chart did not break down how much of it went to this mouse. But I'll tell you something, it's not only the federal government itself up in Montana and its own lab that's making this mouse. Federally funded researchers who get grants from the National Institutes of Health are doing this at major medical schools all around the country, associated with major U.S. universities, very prestigious universities, some of them state universities, some of them private. This is not an uncommon type of research. And people who are involved in there's a sort of group of people, scientists, who are very familiar with this. There's a lot of public information out there in the medical researcher scholarly world. But it isn't something that the average person knows about, but I think they need to know about it, and I think we need to force the Republican leadership in Congress to deal with this because they have complete control over the purse. This can continue to happen if they want it to happen, or they can stop it.
And to that point, just moments ago, the House of Representatives passed a two-week continuing resolution, meaning the government was going to be funded for another 2 weeks till December the 22nd, and they're going to take that up again and probably do a longer. The plan is to do probably a 1 month into January, with the exception of fully funding the military. The point that Terry was just making is that appropriations bills have restrictions, and we've got the House actually passed all their appropriations bills, went to the Senate. The Senate hasn't taken them up. That has the restrictive language. As long as they continue to do these continuing resolutions, which means just an extension of spending, you do not get the policy modifications. And so they continue doing this type of stuff, and people are scratching their heads as to why. Now, Terry, there's current law that covers some of this. I mean, in order for baby tissue to be used, there has to be a consent form, if I'm not mistaken, by the mothers of these babies. Have those consent forms been obtained in these cases?
No. The special investigative committee that looked into fetal tissue research was very critical of the kinds of consent forms that were used at abortion clinics where this tissue is being harvested. And there's a great irony here. A woman goes in to pay someone to kill her baby in an abortion clinic and asks her to sign this consent form to give the tissue from her baby to be used for science when she's the one who's complicit in the killing of the child. Now, what the committee complained about was that the form that was being used suggested that cures and therapies and all these wonderful things had been derived from fetal tissue, which the committee contested. But one of the things that I've asked in the past, Tony, and not gotten an answer for, and I'm going to ask it again in the future, is whether they inform these mothers who donate their sometimes 24-week-old, fully formed, unborn child that's being aborted, that the liver and thymus from their baby is going to be transplanted into mice. Do they tell them that? And I've not gotten an answer to that question. I'm pretty sure they don't. But, you know, that is what is happening. So, and I want to say, another Dan Sikowski was the congresswoman who is the ranking member on that investigative committee on fetal tissue research. She sent out letters to all these institutions that were involved in fetal tissue research asking them, what is the benefit of this research? Because the argument the Democrats wanted to make is, you know, from getting these harvesting these organs from these unborn babies, we're really doing these wonderful things in medical science. And one of the things that came back, which I did cite in my column that I linked to, was a background paper that was prepared by people at Harvard University. And they explained why this tissue had come from aborted babies rather than from miscarriages. And I quote what they said in my column, but basically what they're saying is miscarriage may take place in a person's home. It's spontaneous. They don't know it's happening. This tissue needs to come from a setting where we can get it in a usable form. And that's a polite way of saying it has to happen in a premeditated way in an abortion clinic. Also in my piece, I cite a federally funded researcher who attended a forum on this mouse that was sponsored by the NIH at Bethesda, where the NIH has its headquarters. That scientist said they made 50 to 60 mice from one baby. It's that they had to be able to harvest enough liver and thymus from one baby to cut it into 50 to 60 pieces to transplant into that mouse.
Wow. Wow, amazing. Terry Jeffrey, as always, very informative. Appreciate you coming on, and thank you again for being flexible. Appreciate talking to you, and have a Merry Christmas. Terry Jeffrey with CNSNews.com, a great resource, folks. Terry's one of the best. I love to have him on the program because he does investigative journalism. You don't find that anymore. So check it out. Go to TonyPerkins.com. And follow links over. Okay, still to come, Congressman Steve Scalise going to be with us. Also, Bill Federer taking a look back on this day 76 years ago. Don't go away. We're back after this.
This Christmas season, give with purpose and meaning, a gift that protects life, marriage, and religious liberty. At Family Research Council, our mission is to promote these three core values in public policy and the culture from a Christian worldview. We are working to ensure that our religious liberty is defended in the public square, that human life at all stages is protected, and that family values are promoted in our country's public policies. Your giving can make an eternal difference for your community and for our future generations. And if you give between now and December 31st to Family Research Council, your gift will be matched, meaning it will be doubled by a generous donor. And any donation is tax deductible. Give with purpose this Christmas season. Text FRC to 444-999. Again, that is text FRC to 444-999. Thank you for standing with us. FRC wishes you and your family a Merry Christmas and a blessed New Year. Having a hard time finding that right gift for your family and friends? Need some ideas? Check out Family Research Council's online store and browse the latest books, mugs, trendy t-shirts, baby bibs, tote bags, and more. Your purchase of these items will support FRC and our mission to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and the culture from a Christian worldview. Some of our exclusive items include a unique in-house design DC t-shirt featuring a skyline of the monuments in our nation's capital, a cute baby bib with some pro-life flair, and a stylish tote bag with a Bible verse from 1 John 4:19 that says, "We love because He first loved us." Go to frc.org/store now to start shopping. Again, that is frc.org/store. Thank you for standing with us. FRC wishes you and your family a very Merry Christmas and a blessed New Year.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. A candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. A senior director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Here, Mr. Arnakis discusses the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
Merry Christmas and welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. Glad to have you on this Thursday afternoon. As I mentioned just moments ago, Congress voting to extend the government's funding for another 2 weeks. Congressman Steve Scalise is going to be joining us momentarily. But I want to move on to another topic today. President Trump hosted some World War II veterans at the White House. It was 76 years ago today. The day that would live in infamy, Pearl Harbor. You know, not a lot of folks left that remember that, and we're losing our history. So I thought it's important, to talk about this. One of those major days in American history, December the 7th. Joining us now is Bill Federer. He is a nationally known speaker, best-selling author, and president of Amerisearch, a publishing company dedicated to researching America's noble heritage. Bill, welcome to Washington Watch.
Tony, great to be with you.
Bill, I want to ask you this question. When we look at this event that took place 76 years ago, Pearl Harbor, what significance does that have today?
Well, it has a tremendous significance, one being that FDR did not hesitate to name the enemy. He didn't say we're having a war against terrorism. He named it as the Imperial Japan and then also the Nazis. To me, this was a very significant act, and it mobilized the country. And we went from a very anti-war sentiment, just still in the Depression, to mobilizing millions of people to focus on turning this country around. And it actually worked.
It's almost as if it's a different time, different place. I mean, obviously a different time. But when you see how Americans rallied, and we saw a glimpse of that after 9/11, but I wonder if America again, and we're at a very dangerous point. In fact, the military experts I've spoken to say that we're at a more dangerous time now with what we see happening in North Korea. We got China. We got Russia. We've got the Middle East. Could Americans rally again to the cause of American exceptionalism?
I think we can, and I think we have the right leader in place to do it. You know, I put together a book, Tony, called The Faith of FDR, and I read through every single address he gave while in public office, and I was amazed at his references to faith and to Christianity. So in 1941, in this emergency, FDR says, "The whole world is divided between pagan brutality and the Christian ideal. We choose human freedom, which is the Christian ideal." Here he is unhesitatingly mentioning Christianity. 1941, September 1st, FDR says, "Preservation of these rights is vitally important now, not only to us who enjoy them, but to the whole future of Christian civilization." Here's FDR, elected four times, Democrat president, talking about wanting to preserve the future of Christian civilization. So I do think that him rallying the underlying faith that this country was founded upon was key to getting us to be united to make America great again. One other quote here, FDR said November 1st, 1940, "Those forces hate democracy and Christianity. They oppose democracy because it is Christian. They oppose Christianity because it preaches democracy." And, of course, everyone knows that FDR passed out Gideon's New Testaments and Book of Psalms to all
people
in World War II.
I've got one that has a message from him in the very front of it.
Yeah, it says, "As Commander-in-Chief, I take pleasure in commending the reading of the Bible to all who serve in the armed forces. Signed, Franklin D. Roosevelt." It was blue ones to the Navy and brown ones to the Army. While we're on the subject, here's another quote. FDR, 1945, said, "I saw Sevastopol in Russia and Yalta, and I know that there is not room enough on earth for both German militarism and Christian decency." So, here's the president reaching in and calling us to our faith that gave birth to this great country.
And, you know, Bill, I think that's the same thing. If there's a hope for America that we could be unified, it is that faith. And my concern is what we've seen through the education system, what we've seen through Hollywood, entertainment, the media, is that it has systematically been on a search and destroy mission when it comes to faith.
Well, it has. You know, the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C., had over 500 words inscribed on it, but the designers did not include one reference at all to God. Even in FDR's D-Day prayer, and he mentioned, "So we'll have the ultimate victory, so help us God." And so Chris Long of the Ohio Christian Alliance several years ago got his Congressman Bill Johnson and Rob Portman, Senator, to push through the D-Day Landing Prayer Act. And sure enough, it got signed into law. So within the next couple of years, there will be an addition to the World War II memorial that does indeed mention God. So that's something that we can keep our eyes on and continue to help work through the system. But the war was, you know, a four-year war, World War II, estimated 15 million battle deaths and 45 million civilian deaths. It was a tremendous worldwide war that only became when America got involved, did the victory turn. If it had not been for America getting involved, you look at the map of all the countries that fell in just a couple of years, and I list them all, 1933 Germany, 1936 Italy, 1936 Ethiopia, 37 Japan, Korea, China, Austria, Czechoslovakia, Soviet Union, all these countries getting pulled into the war, New Zealand, Lithuania, Malta, France, Denmark. And finally, in 1941, America gets in, and that's when the whole thing turns around.
You know, I think America was destined to be a leader, and we, once again, I believe, are exercising that leadership worldwide. Bill Fetter, as always, great to talk with you. Merry Christmas, my friend.
Well, Merry Christmas to you, Tony, and to all the listeners.
All right, Bill Fetter. Find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and you can follow the links over. Yes, America, I believe, I mean, you look historically, we have played that leadership role. Now, I think we had fumbled it in the last decade or so, but we have, I think we saw significant leadership just yesterday with the president declaring, "We would put our embassy in Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. All right, still to come, Congressman Steve Scalise is going to be joining us, I think. So stick around. Don't go away.
Spend a semester in Washington, D.C. with Family Research Council through our internship program. You will get a chance to experience the rich history and culture of our nation's capital and be immersed in the most important political debates of our day by working to advance family values in a professional work environment under the oversight and mentorship of FRC experts and scholars. The internship program includes free housing just a block away from Capitol Hill and the Supreme Court, as well as a paid stipend. Learn more at frc.org/internships.
Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Ornakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers. The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. If you would like to take advantage of that matching gift and partner with us, everything you give, whatever you give, will be matched. FRC 866 FRC Radio. 866 FRC Radio. All right. Just moments ago, the House of Representatives voted to extend government funding for 2 weeks. Now, over the next 2 weeks, Congress has to not only come up with a longer-term funding measure, a continuing resolution, but they also have to finish tax reform. Quite a few things going on. Joining us now, House Majority Whip Steve Scalise represents the 1st Congressional District of my home state of Louisiana. He is the former chairman of the House Republican Study Committee. And he's a good friend. Steve, welcome back.
Tony, always great to be with you.
I knew you were going to be late because I was watching you on C-SPAN. So I was. It's always good when I can keep an eye on my friends. So as long as I know where you're at, I'm in good shape. All right. It's when you disappear that I get worried. Okay?
That's it. And you really need to get worried if you ever see Nancy Pelosi holding that gavel again, and we're not going to let that happen.
Yeah, that's true. Very true. Very true. Yeah, well, and key part of that, let's talk about this. We were just talking about this funding bill. You got a 2-week extension to December 22nd. All right, how's this going to play out?
Well, you know, we first of all are working on getting this tax cut bill passed. And as you know, historic tax cuts, these are Reagan-esque kind of tax cuts that President Trump has championed when he was running for office and now as president, and working closely with us so that hopefully by the 20th, we can have a bill on President Trump's desk that cuts taxes for people across the board. Not only does it cut taxes for middle class, hardworking families, it also cuts the corporate rate so that we can be competitive again as a country and stop shipping these good jobs overseas and bring those middle class jobs back. So that's our main focus. But obviously, as we get to the 22nd, we've passed bills over to the Senate that show conservative priorities of how to fund the government, pay our troops, do all of those things, and the Senate has never taken those bills up for months. And that's
now, let me stop right there, because we were talking about this earlier with Terry Jeffries. I want to explain this to our listeners. You said you send over bills. You sent over appropriations bills, which is the way we're supposed to fund government, correct?
That's the constitutional responsibility that the House and Senate have. The House actually did that work months ago, sent those bills over to the Senate. Again, strong conservative priorities, things like defunding Planned Parenthood, paying our troops, reining in these federal agencies, and that's the kind of stuff that I think people expect and want. But the Senate has yet to take any of those bills up. Every Democrat votes to block any of those that come up, and you know, it's been a problem that creates all these deadlines and crises where you get to the deadline and nothing's happened because the Senate's sitting on all these bills.
So we come now to, we got the tax reform going. That looks like it's going forward. Obviously, watching it, there's some priorities. We want to make sure it's in there. Obviously, the child tax credit. We want to make sure that the Johnson Amendment language that the House put in, but the Senate did not, make sure that that's in that. That essentially is the, removing the muzzle from churches, pastors, nonprofits when it comes to political issues.
Yeah, truly equity for religious freedom. And I know you've been a leader and champion of that. And I appreciate all you've done to help me, Jody Heiss, Mike Johnson, and others get that language in the House bill. We got a really strong language in the House bill that passed, which was historic. You've never seen a repeal of the Johnson Amendment pass the House, and we were able to get that done. Mark Meadows helped with that effort, too. Unfortunately, the Senate did not follow suit. So in the conference committee, we are trying to get the House language in, but unfortunately, the Senate didn't do it, so we're gonna continue battling that out, as well as a lot of other important issues for how to cut taxes in that tax cut bill.
So, folks, you're going to have to help out with that. I'm going to give you the switchboard number here in a little bit. You're going to have to help get your senators moving on that. So we get to the 22nd. We're going to have another funding mechanism because the Senate, as you said, Democrats blocking the appropriations bill. So how long are we going to continue to fund government by continuing resolution?
Well, I don't want us to continue doing that. But, you know, when we see these deadlines, one of the things that Speaker Ryan has said when we get to the week of the 22nd is that we're going to take about a month-long continuation of all forms of government except Department of Defense. And we're going to take the defense appropriations bill that we passed out of the House that properly funds our Defense Department for the entire year with a pay raise for the troops, and a restoration of some of the degrading you've seen under Barack Obama. Barack Obama literally did drain our military, our readiness, equipment, and planes that are falling apart on the tarmac. We and Donald Trump has wanted to restore our Defense Department to the strength and leader of the world, as we should. So we're going to put that bill for a year on top of a short-term bill and send it over to the Senate the week of the 22nd and make them do their job.
Well, we won't have long to wait. We got 2 weeks, and we'll see what they do, because I'm sure, like the rest of us, they want to get home for Christmas, too.
Yeah, and we all want to celebrate Christmas. I know even that became controversial over time, and I'm glad that you promote Christmas so much. It's a celebration of the birth of Jesus, and we all want to remember what that season's about.
Absolutely, and I'm sure this will be a very special Christmas for you. Steve Scalise.
It'll be a special Christmas for me. Merry Christmas to you, Tony.
Merry Christmas. I hope to see you probably next week. Steve Scalise, House Majority Whip. Website, TonyPerkins.com. All right. The switchboard number to call your senator to tell them to support the Johnson Amendment repeal, 202-224-3121. 202-224-3121. Okay, we're coming back, and we're going to go to the phone line. But you're going to have to wait until I tell you what we're going to talk about. Don't go away. We're coming back with more Washington Watch after this.
Are you interested in making a real impact in public policy and culture? And are you looking for an internship experience at a Christian organization in the heart of our nation's capital? If the answer is yes, spend a semester in Washington, D.C. with Family Research Council through our internship program. You will get a chance to experience our country's rich history and culture and be immersed in the most important political debates of our day. Further, you will develop the skills required to advance faith, family, and freedom in our nation. Family Research Council's internship program includes free housing just a block away from Capitol Hill and the Supreme Court, as well as a paid stipend. As an intern, you will gain an invaluable public policy experience in a professional work environment under the oversight and mentorship of FRC experts and scholars. Learn more about the FRC internship program at frc.org/internships. Again, that is frc.org/internships.
Having a hard time finding that right gift for your family and friends? Need some ideas? Check out Family Research Council's online store and browse the latest books, mugs, trendy t-shirts, baby bibs, tote bags, and more. Your purchase of these items will support FRC in our mission to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and the culture from a Christian worldview. Some of our exclusive items include a unique in-house design DC t-shirt featuring a skyline of the monuments in our nation's capital, a cute baby bib with some pro-life flair, and a stylish tote bag with a Bible verse from 1 John 4:19 that says, "We love because He first loved us." Go to frc.org/store now to start shopping. Again, that is frc.org/store. Thank you for standing with us. FRC wishes you and your family a very Merry Christmas and a blessed New Year.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas everywhere you go. Take a look in the 5 and 10, glistening.
Yes, it's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. In fact, I'll be heading back to Louisiana and looking at the weather. It's supposed to snow in Louisiana. How about that? That doesn't happen often. I'm going to talk about that in just a moment. Here's what Christmas traditions. What are your family's favorite Christmas traditions? We're going to be talking about that over the next couple of weeks, just working those in. I've got another story here I want to talk about, but go ahead and give me a call. 866-372-7234. All right, that's a call-in number. If you'd like to share with our listening audience your family's Christmas traditions. Our family has one, and I'll share that in a little bit. But I want to give you that switchboard number again to call. Actually, I got to pull my phone back out. I got a had a senator calling me during the break. 202-224-3121. 202-224-3121. That's to say, hey, in fact, that's just what I was talking about with a member of the Senate. He called regarding the Johnson Amendment. All right. The conferees from the House and the Senate are coming together over this tax reform bill. It was in the House version, but not in the Senate version. So the conferees, I was hearing from some of the House conferees who were saying the Senate was not making it a priority. We need them to raise it and say they want it in there. So you need to call your senator and say, we need to remove the muzzle from churches, pastors, nonprofits, and let them speak freely. That's the repeal of the Johnson Amendment. It's in the tax reform bill. All right, 202-224-3121. Okay, family traditions. What are your family's Christmas traditions? 866-372-7234, if you'd like to share those with our listeners. I do want to share this other action item because our republic only works when you're engaged. And this is a troubling story that was coming out from the Department of Defense yesterday. The Department of Defense responding to this latest situation with transgenders in the military. Now, this is the latest on the saga on transgender individuals serving in the military. A federal judge is forcing the Department of Defense to have them serving by January 1st. That's just around the corner. Now, earlier this year, President Trump tried to return the military to the status quo after former President Obama radically departed from the longstanding policy and sought to push his radical social engineering policy on the military by forcing the military to allow those who identify as transgender to serve openly. He did that. He was very involved with it. But as usual, activists sued the president. Seems like that's all they do these days. And the federal court put a hold on the administration's policy. Well, in addition to the court unconstitutionally intruding into executive authority to govern the military, a federal district court judge has now compounded the problems that she's created. After her October 30 opinion was issued, and she ordered the administration to change its policy by January 1st, the Trump administration, which is actually charged with running the military, unlike this federal judge, they had sought more time to respond to her demands, but the judge denied it. Now, in addition to having to appeal to the district court, it's a D.C. district, the Department of Justice has also asked this federal judge to put on hold the part of her order that transgender recruits be allowed to serve until the litigation is completed. Well, this is a quite reasonable request, but the they've said no. And so they have ordered the Department of Defense to be prepared to allow transgenders to serve beginning January 1st. Now, this is also part of another case ordering the administration to provide funding for sex reassignment surgeries. Again, contrary to what the president, who is the commander-in-chief, said. These are policies that unilaterally were created by Barack Obama. And now you've got a new president who realizes, who makes very clear, our military's job is to win wars, not engage in social experimentation, not to be, you know, these men and women who serve in uniform are not lab rats. Well, here's what has to happen. The Department of Justice has to be aggressive in fighting this. And I want to I've not given this number out before, but I'm going to give out the White House switchboard number. Oh, actually, it's the comment line. You can just call and comment. Two things you could do. You can actually thank the president for taking the bold stand on the embassy in Jerusalem, but also encourage him to have his administration stand firm in his policy of ending this social experimentation with our military as it pertains to transgenders. Okay, that number, 202-456-1111, 202-456-1111. I know today is the day of phone numbers, giving out a lot of phone numbers. 202-456-1111. Be a good number to save in your smartphone. Okay, Christmas traditions. What are the traditions that your family engages in Christmas? Let's go to Bob in Missouri. Bob, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for giving me an opportunity. God bless you for your work. And my favorite family tradition was my father. I'm 58. My father's gone to be with the Lord. But he used to recite Annie and Willie's Prayer, the poem, from memory every Christmas.
Wow. And
that's a great poem if you've never read it.
And he did that from the time that you were a child?
Oh, yes. Yeah. My dad was in Vietnam for quite a while. He was in Korea, and so I was raised by grandparents. But whenever I was with my dad, whenever I could see him, which sometimes was years at a time, he would always do it.
Wow. That's a great story. Bob, thanks so much for sharing that with our listeners, and Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you too, sir.
All right, let's go to Alabama, where Will is on the line. Will, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, thank you, sir.
So what's your family's Christmas tradition?
Well, me and my family, we have great respect for time-tested traditions, but last year we started a new tradition where every Christmas we rewatch the debates between Trump and Hillary, and we all get a big kick out of the part where Trump, you know, says, because you'd be in jail. And, you know, where the camera pans to Bill Clinton's face, and when all his accusers are there in the room, and his face is just, you know, just, oh, the dread and the guilt all over the man's face.
And, well, that's pretty good. That's pretty good, Will. I mean, that's got to be right up there with the Grinch who stole Christmas. I wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole. Will, thanks so much for calling in and sharing your new Christmas tradition. 866-372-7234. Does your family have a favorite Christmas tradition? If so, share it with us. Let's go to Missouri, where Steve is on the line. Steve, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. Thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely.
From the first year my wife and I were married, we go get a live Christmas tree, and we have them cut the bottom of the tree off so we get more water in it. And I put the number one on the very first tree, and we've been doing that for 30 years. This is our 30th anniversary. So we have 30 tree trunk stubs that we've saved over the years. And unfortunately, this is the first year we've gotten an artificial tree, so I'm not sure how we're going to handle that.
Yeah, that wouldn't last too long if you start cutting the bottom off that artificial tree.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, you might be able to do it 1 or 2 years, and then, well, then you're out of tree. Steve, thanks so much for calling in.
Oh, thank you.
And Merry Christmas. I guess I should have asked him, what did they do with those little pieces of stump? 866-372-7234, favorite family Christmas traditions is what we're kind of talking about today. In fact, I'm going to have some, before Christmas comes, I'm going to have some members of Congress on. That's what we're going to just kind of ask them the same question. What does your family like to do? You know, they're real people. They really are. All right, let's go to Laura in Missouri. Laura, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Go right ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to tell you about our Christmas tradition about 15 years ago, and my kids are old now. About 15 years ago, we would always dress. We would buy pajamas. We were doing pajamas before other people. We would always buy pajamas, and even the guys had to have, like, matching pants. And so we would always go to the nearest gas station by our house. And so every year for the past 15 years, we have always got hot chocolate, and we're talking like 8 people in one car. Okay, so we're always just having fun. And so we would go and we would ride through all of St. Louis and look at all the Christmas lights and go down by the arch and all these things. And so every
in your PJs.
Yes, and so we have had people for all these years take pictures of us. So like we have 15 years worth of pictures of us with our hot chocolate and our pajamas standing in one of our gas stations here by our house.
Well, I would tell you, my mother, that's what she wanted to do for all of our family, my brother, my two sisters, and our families. And my wife, she interceded, and she told my mother, she said, I can tell you right now, that'll never work with your son. So let's try plan B. I'm not going out of the house in my PJs. So anyway, Laura, thanks so much for...
Fantastic.
Well, I guess so. But I'll just have to take your word for it. Okay. 866-372-7234, the number to call to share your family's favorite Christmas tradition. Let's go to Georgia, where Brent is on the line. Brent, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you for having me. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
I just wanted to say that a really special Christmas tradition that my dad started about 15 years ago when my sister and myself and our families, we started producing some grandchildren for him and my mom. We started reading the Christmas story, the birth of of Christ, and that's it means a lot to him. Ultimately, he wants to place the story of Christ in our children's hearts, and that's what he likes to do. Before we always gather to open gifts at a specific time around Christmas at his home, and that's what he likes to do, and we all enjoy it very much.
Brent, that's great. We have the same one. My father has done the same one since my children were born, and my oldest will soon be 26. And every Christmas Eve, we gather at my parents' home, and my father reads the Christmas story, and then we have a great time. Just my mom likes to play different games, and we just have a great time, and I always eat more than I should, and just love the whole evening. It's one of my favorite nights of the year. Brent, thanks so much for calling in and sharing that. All right, we're going to run out of time, but here's what I want to do, okay? I want to be able to continue this throughout the next couple of weeks. And so even when the program's over, if you'll call the number and just record your favorite Christmas tradition, just give me your name, state you're from, and then we'll play these over the course of the next couple of weeks, because I want to try to capture as many of these as we can. I still haven't shared my family's Christmas tradition, but we will, okay? I'm going to share it with you, but you got to be listening, all right? 866-372-7234 is the number to call to share that Christmas tradition. I'm going to work in one more real quick. We're going to go to Mary in Kansas. Mary, welcome to Washington Watch.
Yes, thank you, Tony. When my grandson was born, we started, it's kind of been not a very long-term tradition, but we make a cake or cupcakes, and we put a saying on there like, Christ is born, or happy birthday, Jesus. And this year is going to be in cupcakes, spelling out Christ is Christmas, with decorations around it. So every year we do something different. And my grandson, that was his ideal when he was about 3 or 4. So we do that every year.
Well, keep it going, Mary. Those traditions are so special, and kids remember them. I remember when I was a kid, the things that we did over at my grandmother's home. When we would gather for Thanksgiving, or we would go there for Christmas Eve, and the kids, my cousins and I, we would put on plays, and we would. There was always special dishes we would have. I usually liked the sweets; they were good. But those things are special, and kids remember. And it's a point of connection and identity, and those are important. So if you don't have those traditions, find them, you know, create one, start one. It's never too late to start. And if you have them, keep them going. And I'm going to share one with you that goes all the way back to when my dad was a kid that we continue today in my home. But I'm not going to share it today because we're out of time. But I will. All right, 866-372-7234. Share your favorite Christmas tradition. Call that line and leave it for us, and we'll get to that over the next couple of weeks. All right, folks, out of time for today, but I want to thank you for joining us. Thank you for being a part of the growing, expanding Washington Watch audience. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.